Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, is hosted by Annex Wealth Management, a fee-only registered investment advisor. Important information about the qualifications and business practices of Annex is available at annexwealth.com. Different types of investments involve varying degrees of risk. Please consult with a qualified fiduciary advisor about your specific situation. Annex Wealth Management is a local fee-only fiduciary providing investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning. Know the difference. Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
The jobs are down in June, and so are inflation expectations. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Hey, great to have you here. Happy 4th of July weekend, and happy birthday, America. Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson is here. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's great to be here.
And CEO of Annex Wealth Management, Dave Spano.
Thanks, Joe. Yes, so much to be thankful for. Of course, 250th birthday of the greatest country in the world. And you think about some other things that you want to celebrate. Well, guess what, folks? The second quarter has been the best quarter that we have seen in a long time. In fact, if you go back, Brian, and look at where the S&P and the NASDAQ are, it's the best earnings season that we can recall, up over 24% just in Q2. And that comes on a 29% in Q1, so really good earnings.
Yeah, it's been this repeat performance with these double-digit gains for earnings. And that's an important thing to remember, is that fundamentals matter, especially over the long term. Even in the near term, companies just continue to surprise to the upside with earnings. And that is one of the reasons why it shouldn't be too surprising that the market, that prices, respond to that. In fact, I mean, that is one of the things that we always look for, is what are the expectations? Is there room for a surprise to the upside or the downside? And position accordingly. And companies, as we enter in a couple weeks from now, we will have the Q2 earnings season rolling in terms of those numbers. It kicks off with the big banks. And the expectations, they're high, but I don't think that they're really astronomically high. So I think that this will be a really interesting earnings season as we get ready to go into that in about 10 days.
Yeah, and that expectation is really good. But if you look at the top performers, folks, and say, where is my portfolio? 23 of the top 25 performers were in technology. So certainly an overweight in that particular sector has been very beneficial to those who were overweight in those particular sectors. So, you know, we got some other good news. We had market leaders happening, but we also had some payroll numbers on Thursday morning that looked pretty good as well.
Yeah, it was fun to actually have that come out on Thursday before the holiday. So July 2nd, those numbers came out. And it was worse than expected, but it was still a good number. It's just people's expectations were that we were going to see a fourth month in a row of more than 100,000 non-farm payroll gains. In fact, it came in at plus 57,000, which is actually in normal times kind of what you would hope for, just given population dynamics, labor force growth. 57,000 is probably close to like the break-even run rate for payrolls, and that's exactly what we got for the month of June. Interestingly, the unemployment rate dropped from 4.3% to 4.2%. Now, a lot of that is because of the labor force. Labor force growth has not been what it used to be. And so that's one of the things that the Fed is really trying to struggle with, is even if you have this kind of just chugging along 57K kind of job gains every single month, that might be good enough to keep that unemployment rate at what is probably pretty close to full employment.
When you think about the Fed and what they have in front of them, you know, we see full employment, and this number that we have is really full employment. But the other side of that is, are we seeing inflation expectations start to reduce? And ironically, all of this technology is really becoming inflationary. You think about chips and, you know, where it's going with phones. You saw Apple raise some of their iPad prices because of memory. So the shortage of memory is kind of having an inflationary impact, and that's something that probably wasn't expected.
That's correct. A lot of people were thinking, you know, new technology, that typically means that that's an innovation drives productivity and actually inflation lower. But the near term, they do have to get through this chip and memory shortage issue. It takes time to build that extra capacity. The government of South Korea announced that they were going to be having this basically big push towards building out their capacity. So they have two very large memory makers in Korea. Interestingly, the Korean market has been quite a wild ride, big swings up and down, because some of the dominant players in the memory space, that's where they're located, but they have committed to expanding production, but that's going to take time. Now, early in the year, inflation was mostly driven by energy, right? Gasoline prices, diesel prices, even you can see it in like fertilizer prices, which might eventually show up in food prices. But there was also underneath the surface, you could see a 10.5% year-over-year increase in information processing equipment prices that consumers are paying. So you can think about that as consumer electronics. So we have seen some of that inflation, but it doesn't affect inflation expectations quite as much as the price at the pump. A lot of times the expectations for inflation are more driven by if that pump price is going up, expectations of inflation increase. If the pump price goes down, those expectations also fall. So I think that as long as we see gasoline prices can stay about where they are or drift lower, probably the Fed's job is going to be a lot easier. They're going to not have to squawk so hawkishly about maybe threatening to do rate hikes just to keep inflation in check.
Squawk so hawkishly. I like that. So, you know, you look at where we were in just a quarter ago. I went back and checked my notes earlier this week, and we had all of this wall of worry, right? You had the Iran conflict and the consternation there. You had the private credit, which we really haven't talked about, was a big concern. You had a new Fed chair coming in and expectations that he wasn't going to lower rates, but actually tighten and raise rates, all of that. And then we had this quarter with all of these earnings reports. And in fact, expectations were even higher. Now, look at all of the positivity that's happening since then. You've got oil, you know, you got the Straits of Hormuz kind of opening, you have tech came out. You have consumer confidence continuing to go up, and a GDP expectation for next quarter is pretty solid. So you really have to take it on balance, and which means we're going to get some more oscillation, Brian, in the stock markets, which is opportunities if you're ready and able to take advantage of them. And that's the reason why if your portfolio is not where you want it to be, you're probably going to get another opportunity as these oscillations happen.
That's right. And what we have seen is actually a decent amount of breadth in the markets. And so that's just how many companies are actually participating in these gains. It's not as concentrated as it used to be. When we've dug into the numbers, if you just think about for the overall S&P 500, about 47% of the companies in there, just counting them, about 250 of them are beating the overall index. So there is plenty of opportunity. It's not just in tech. It's not just in mega cap. Where we've been seeing it on the investment committee is in the areas where companies that can actually profitably use artificial intelligence, think about like industrials, biotech, areas like that, or robotics, but then also the cyclical strength of the economy. Yes, we might be going from a sprint to a jog when it comes to labor market growth, but that should be beneficial, we think, probably for like financials and also other areas. So cast that wider net. That's one of the things that we're really focused on.
And as we go into this 4th of July weekend, folks, we're now entering the second half of the year, and it's really a time to take a look at your portfolio and make sure that it is aligned correctly. This is a good time to get a second look, because we're at the midpoint of the year.
And more than halfway through the year, yes. If you aren't where you thought you would be with your portfolio, Annex follows the market trends on a daily basis and can help guide you through the numbers with an experienced team that is all in-house so you can make informed decisions. No pressure. We listen first, then work with you towards the lifestyle that you want. Click the Get Started button at AnnexWealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Custom-tailored investment and retirement planning from a fee-only fiduciary. Know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Restricted stock and RSUs are ways companies give employees shares, but you don't have to fully own them until they vest over time or based on performance. So unlike stock options, these still have value even if the stock price drops, which makes them a more stable form of compensation. However, it might be important to understand how vesting schedules and taxes work so you can get the most benefit. Something that we've helped clients with here at Annex Wealth Management. And to help us talk about it today, Manager of Financial Planning, Tom Burkholz, back on the show. Hey, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
And Financial Planning Specialist back on the show as well, Arabella Parents. Hey, Arabella.
Hello.
All right, so let's talk about restricted stock. And let's try to simplify this. So I always like to think about it as it's just a component of your overall compensation package. So just like your base wages and cash bonuses and employer match and 401k match and all those types of things. Really, equity compensation fits in that same umbrella as well. And it's the most common form that we see, Arabella, right?
Yeah, there's so many different types of equity compensation that you can see out there. But like you mentioned, RSUs, the restricted stock units, are going to be the most common, the most popular. They're just a little bit more simple on the administrative side, which is why employers favor those.
Yeah, and I always like to think about it too as like a bonus. Like instead of your employer paying you a cash bonus, your employer is simply paying you a bonus kind of in the form of the company stock. And it's usually subject to a vesting period as well. So let's talk about the vesting process and how that works and why it matters, because it's a very important part of the overall equity compensation. It's kind of like the strings attached to the reward. Simply put, there's two different flavors. There is graded, where you kind of earn some shares over time, which I think is most common that we see. And then there's the cliff. So, Arabella, talk to us about the graded vesting that you see with RSUs or stock options.
Yeah, so when it comes to vesting, the most important thing to understand is this is essentially the way that you get ownership of this stock. And as they vest, that's when they become available to you. And so with a graded vesting schedule, that means that every single year, usually it's over 3 or 4 years, you get a certain percentage. Say it's a 4-year vesting schedule graded, you get 25% every single year that's vesting. And when this vests, it means that you can now own these shares. They become available. And really what that is all about, why there's vesting schedules that are introduced, is so that your employer has a way to keep you there. There's that incentive. They want you to stay. They want you to be there for longer. Oftentimes, your retirement is based off of this vesting schedule, where if you have a bunch of equity compensation that's vesting next year, well, you're going to push off your retirement until next year. Because if you leave your job under a lot of scenarios, you're going to lose out on unvested equity compensation. Now, there are scenarios in which you can maybe work it out with your employer or your plan may have some provisions, but it's really important to understand the vesting schedule and the options you have, because if you leave your job and you don't have vested RSUs, you might lose out on a lot of benefit.
Yeah. And if I'm an employee, I would prefer personally to have graded, only because I want to unlock some shares each year or each quarter that I work and at least get a portion if I decide to change jobs or retire or something like that, versus the cliff. It happens all at once and it could be 4 years from now. So you may end up never seeing that value. But next, let's talk about the difference between restricted stock awards and restricted stock unit. One letter difference. Time to time, we do see some RSAs, and I always like to tell people it really comes down to ownership. With an RSA, the ownership is treated at the time of grant. So you are kind of an owner at upfront, subject to vesting. And the two main differences are that you typically have voting rights, and you typically can participate in dividends as well. So RSAs are a little bit more generous, but we just don't see them as much.
I wonder why. Because they're more generous, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right. And I know I've heard that from a corporate accounting perspective, companies love RSUs. They're simpler for the books. They're simpler for employees, and they're cleaner because then you don't have to pay out the dividends along the way and things like that. When do employees have to pay taxes on these awards?
Tax is a very fundamental part of your understanding of equity compensation. So the different events throughout, there's the grant date, there's the vest date, there's the date in which you actually sell the stock. All these dates are tied into different tax events. So your vesting date is when you are ultimately taxed as ordinary income on the fair market value of your RSU. So on the day that it vests, you have that ownership that counts as income to you. It's going to appear on your pay stub. It's going to appear on your W-2 at the end of the year. It's going to be like any of other of your wage income, all ordinary income. That happens upon the vesting date, and then you're going to have the stock to actually hold or sell as you please. And so when you eventually sell the stock, there's going to either be a capital gain or capital loss, depending on the value that you sell it at relative to that fair market value that it was originally taxed at. That's your cost basis. So those dollars won't be taxed again. And then it's a capital gain or capital loss upon when you sell the stock.
The other thing to remember with RSUs is that generally your company is going to withhold a flat 22% federal plus applicable state taxes as well. That can be great because it can help with your overall tax liability, but we see this all the time where an employee is actually in the 32% marginal rate or 37%. And if your company is withholding a flat 22%, there can be a spread there or a delta, and it could lead to under withholding or even some tax penalties as well, which as preparers, we see that all the time as well.
Manager of Financial Planning at Annex Wealth Management, Tom Burkles, thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
Arabella Parents, Financial Planning Specialist, thank you.
Thank you.
Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Make sure to click that Get Started button. See what we're about at annexwealth.com.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
More in-person events coming up. Couples in Retirement is one that's coming up at the end of this month. You can reserve your spot at annexwealth.com. Just click the events tab. Dr. Brian Jacobson, our chief economic strategist. We talk a lot about habits for couples in retirement, but also leading up to that too. We have a lot of folks here just in the building that have recently gotten married and they're starting to plan a little bit, even just planning the wedding. But you have that big, beautiful day, but then you don't really think about retirement together for the next 20, 30, 40 years. We talk about getting into some of those smart habits early on.
Yeah, well, you can think about it in the entire life cycle, right? Most people have that stereotypical view about you get married when you're young and then you live together through retirement. That can be an adjustment process, right? Especially if it's where one person was working, one person wasn't, or if they were taking turns, both of them working full time, and now all of a sudden you have a lot more time together. That's a major adjustment. But what about also those situations, people who perhaps their status as an individual or a couple changes in retirement? We've seen plenty of those situations as well. It can affect your Social Security, estate planning, tax planning, so many different things to kind of think about. Obviously, focus on the relationship. That's the most important thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
But there's also all
your
these
wife's
other things.
Listening, isn't she?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Financial planning at every level, Annex Comprehensive Wealth, Annex Private Client, and Annex Ignite. 9 total locations. There's one near you. Another quick reminder, our Women in Wealth live in-person series continues. Women in Wealth in full bloom, an evening of connection, appreciation, and community. That is at Bernard Botanical Gardens. Our friends over there helping us host that event July 16th, 5:30 to 7:30. And we would love to have you there. Click events, reserve your spot, bring a friend, annexwealth.com. Glad you're here with us this morning. Time for news. Let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center.
Planning and investing insight from a fee-only fiduciary. You're listening to Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Our new Women in Wealth page is up at annexwealth.com, including the new Women in Wealth podcast on demand with special guests and strategies to empower women and gain greater confidence. Just click the Women in Wealth page at annexwealth.com. Back to Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson and Chief Growth Officer at Annex, Mark Beck.
So, Brian, we are celebrating the 250th anniversary of our country. Amazing milestone. What's the term for that, by the way?
Yeah, so 250 is the semi-quincentennial. So semi is half, the quin for five, centennial 100. So 5 times 100, that's 500, but semi, 250. I had to work through that math to figure out why did they pick that.
Fantastic. Yeah. I just thought, you know, we could spend a little bit of time on kind of a journey on how America has changed, but really how that's impacted your money and your financial life along the way. And we won't go back to 1776, but we'll go back to 1976. We'll kind of cover the last 50 years in certain blocks and just hit some windows of time that were really impactful, because there has been so much progression over the last 50 years. And if we kind of put it into some periods, right, we can start with that 1976 period and talk about stagflation and what it was. But before we do that, we'll set a little cultural scene for you, if you will, and talk about some popular things at the time, Star Wars being a really big one. That was 1977, by the way.
Yeah.
It has progressed ever since. But also in that window of time was Dallas and who shot JR, and a look into a glimpse of what wealthy families really looked like that brought that kind of into the family room of the average everyday American.
I remember watching that. So I was born in 1976, so the bicentennial. And so this year I get to celebrate my semi-centennial. Well, America celebrates the semi-quincentennial. But
during that period, welcome to the group, by the way.
That's right. But I do remember watching that show, and it was almost like a voyeur kind of watching in. You saw the wealth. And it was also about the being in Dallas with the heart of oil country there. And that is what really led to the rapid inflation that we saw in the end of the 1970s. You had the 1979 revolution in Iran. So kind of similar to what we've got going on here, right? Spike in oil prices driving inflation. You had some monetary policy decisions that perhaps were not the best ones. So is that combination of the high inflation and then the stagnating economy with a high unemployment rate, that gives you that stagflationary period. Now, thankfully, we did end up having that where Paul Volcker came in, broke the back of inflation, and then really set the stage for the growth that we had in the 1980s. An important part of that was all the tax reform that took place, too.
Absolutely. I don't want to run past, by the way, one really important thing that occurred. 1978, the Revenue Act of 1978, almost accidentally created the 401k, which shifted the financial dynamic of America from that point really all the way to where we are right now.
Yeah, it really did. 1978, a little known provision in there. It took a while for it to take off until probably like 1988-ish, but that did create that 401k, shifting it from a defined benefit plan where all of the retirement risk was on the employer more towards the employee with the defined contribution plan.
You bet. You were talking a little bit about Paul Volcker breaking the back of inflation, and this is also the period of Reaganomics. Just define that a little bit for our listeners.
Yeah, so Reaganomics was really, let's lower tax rates, focus more on the supply side of the economy, realize that taxes, can kind of dull the incentives that people face. So during that period of time, you had the breaking of the back of inflation, you had lowering of tax rates as well to focus on incentives, really a booming period of economic growth. Also, some budgetary challenges, of course, during that period of time.
And what else was going on? Michael Douglas was Gordon Gekko in Wall Street. That's 1987, by the way. Also, the year of Black Monday.
Oh, yeah. Black Monday, October 1987, suddenly a dramatic drop in stock prices. And thankfully, it actually ended up positive for all of 1987, if you were to look at it from start to finish. So the people who panicked and sold at the bottom, they didn't fare so well.
And uncertainty with geopolitical situations, the new Fed chair, inflation or taxes, we're here at Annex. Having someone ready to answer your questions can make all the difference, especially with a whole in-house team, so you don't have to go anywhere else. Click get started at annexwealth.com. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Money Talk is straight talk from a local fee-only fiduciary. It's time to know the difference. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Back on Money Talk as we celebrate America's 250th and the 250 years of the economy, Chief Economic Strategist Dr. Brian Jacobson and Chief Growth Officer Mark Beck.
Brian, let's continue on our journey here as we're talking about the economic backdrop that we've seen over the last 50 years as we mark the 250th anniversary of our great country, and we've put it, you know, putting some backdrop to some time periods. It's a lot of fun, I think. One of the things to think about is how tax legislation has evolved over the time. And we were just coming out of that period of talking about 1987. We had the Economic Recovery Tax Act that came about in that time period as well, which was dramatically different than most tax legislation and what it did to tax brackets.
It really did. So in 1986, with that act, it actually really eliminated a lot of them. Instead of having all these graduated rates going really high, it was like, okay, let's simplify it. Get rid of a bunch of deductions and exemptions and just tax income at either 15% for the first part, and then anything above a certain level, it would be at 28%. Dramatic simplification. It did have budgetary effects, of course, but longer term, the argument was it's going to spur more growth. Even this 40 years hence, people are still arguing about whether or not it worked in that regard. But the fact is, it did make the tax code a little bit simpler.
Interesting that we can always debate the effectiveness of things like tax increases or tax decreases and what that does to an economy.
Yeah, it becomes more of a political discussion. And part of it is because there are so many conflating factors. If you're like, is it good or bad for the budget? Oh, is it good or bad for the economy? There are so many other variables that affect it that it's really hard to tease that out. You can't just run an experiment, say, in this country, we're going to use this, and in this exactly parallel country, we're going to have a different tax code to measure the difference between them. You just can't do that, unfortunately.
It would be very fun experiment if we could do that.
Yeah. But
on the heels of this, along comes the 90s, you know, the digital dawn, and also what we call the peace dividend because of the fall of the Soviet Union. Just talk about the economic backdrop and the sort of the tailwind that was the demise of the Soviet Union.
Yeah, so what it really did was brought a number of countries into the global fold as far as with trade, new areas for businesses to sell into, but also then the flip side is new places for them to locate production, taking advantage of perhaps lower cost labor. So, you had the positives, you also had the negatives with it. But during that period of time, not only did we have this increase in globalization, you also had the internet and people being able to get online. Do you remember AOL, You've Got Mail, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah, so, everybody can remember that sort of sound of when the modem was connecting.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
That sounded like.
I used to be able to do 90s. An impression of that. Yeah. I won't do it right now. Yeah, it was crazy sound.
Here's what I'm going to do, though. I'm going to bring together the 90s and popular culture and tax references all comes together in a Seinfeld reference. It's a write-off, Jerry.
Hey, that's you don't even know what a write-off is.
There you go.
That's right. What are you writing it off from?
Yeah. And Jerry didn't know what it was.
No, that's right.
No, I don't. I don't know what it is.
But during that period of time, right, if you think about it, we had the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997 giving us the Roth IRA, right? So 1978, we get the 401k. In 1997, we get the Roth IRA. Creates some tremendous tax planning opportunities today for people who have maybe a mix of these different types of accounts.
Yeah, then all these years later, exactly, where we're working on for every single day thinking about how to leverage that Roth IRA gift, if you will, because of the power of that, the power of tax-free compounding. And remember when it was created, when you inherited a Roth IRA, you got to extend that over your lifetime in terms of required distributions. That's not the case any longer. You have a 10-year window of time now, but it's still a very powerful 10-year window of time. It's very impactful tax legislation and accelerated that shift, I think. So we're in a period of time where the 401k is highly popular at this point. There's a dramatic shift occurring away from the defined benefit plan, which is known as a pension plan, towards defined contribution, where you contribute, save, and invest, and also creating this additional tool of the ability to do that tax-free. And it took many years, but that became a strong component of the 401k platform as well.
It did. And now within the 401k, you can also have the Roth 401k. So it's always a question of what tax bracket are you in now? So do you want to get the tax advantage today, or do you want to have it later when you might be in a lower tax bracket? So tremendous planning. That's where some of these tools that we use, where people can come in and we can look at is just statistically which one maybe looks a little bit better as far as make the contribution to the Roth version or the traditional version. When do you want to do those conversions? And a lot of this is a result of that, 1997 legislation that took place.
Happy 4th of July weekend. Thanks for being with us on Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show at 620 WTMJ.
Financial planning at every level. Annex Ignite. Annex Comprehensive Wealth. Annex Private Client. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on WTMJ.
Hey, thank you for having us on for your 4th of July weekend. Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. It's also a podcast ready for you as soon as the show is over at the top of the hour. You can download it wherever you get your podcasts. And of course, another way to get our education is with the Axiom. That is our newsletter. It doesn't take holiday weekends off. Our weekend review video in your email on Sunday morning, along with what we're watching for the week ahead. Just search Annex Axiom. Other podcasts too, like The Wealthiest: Ideas, Strategies, and Decisions of the Wealthy in America. That's a very interesting one. And SWOT: Strengths, Weaknesses, Opportunities, and Threats of the Current Market, with a new episode first thing Monday morning. And our new Women in Wealth podcast, featuring very special guests helping to empower women through genuine conversations. Chief Economic Strategist at Annex, Dr. Brian Jacobson, is here, and Chief Growth Officer Mark Beck.
We all love our great country, Brian. We're taking this little journey here on some of the important tax and economic and financial planning milestones over the last 50 years. And honestly, it's quite fun because you think about how impactful some of these things are, how they shape the way that, you know, people really have experienced their own financial journey. And we get to spend a lot of time with people helping them shape their financial journey. And we use this history of whether it's tax legislation or the creation of the 401k. We talked in the last segment here about the Roth IRA, when that came about. But let's talk about the lost decade. We're going to move into some less fun periods of time here because of the, I don't know, stock market impacts of some of these windows of time.
Sure.
Lost decade, subprime suburbia, another way to look about that. Talk about the subprime environment that came about during that window and what that meant in terms of watching the dot-com bubble burst.
Yeah, well, and some of this can be very scarring for people, right? In terms of if you are at that age where you are investing during that period of time, and all of a sudden that kind of shaped the way that you think about the economy and the markets, that can have long-lasting effects. And all of these pieces of legislation that we've been discussing as well, the long tail to them is sometimes what we refer to that as. The importance of remembering that things can change, right? The tax code, as we oftentimes say, is written in pencil. So even these permanent changes aren't really permanent. But during that lost decade, right, you had the tech bubble bursting. And so that was the dot-com bubble bursting. Then you had 9/11. Then you also had, in terms of, if you think about just the war in Afghanistan, in Iraq, shaping the way that a lot of people think about the world, the importance of geopolitical events on the U.S. economy and on the U.S. markets. Then we had the buildup of the subprime bubble as far as the housing bubble that was building. Then when that bursts, right, as far as what's the aftermath? Bubbles are always kind of fun when they're inflating, but when you have these valuations, too much leverage, then you get the burst. That's the part where that's the payback.
I don't think we even knew the concept of a stock market bubble until the dot-com bubble. And that was that period of time where we sort of created that. And everybody has been wary of bubbles, I think, ever since. Even to the point where you think about post-pandemic, the most hated stock market rally in history, where many, many people stayed on the sidelines because they were just fearful that that was the creation of the next bubble and they were going to get whiplashed during that.
So true. During the global financial crisis, there was a phrase that came out. It was called a black swan, right? Which is actually, it dates back to David Hume in the 1700s. He talked about how if you are walking around and all of a sudden you see a black swan, but in your life you've only seen that swans are white, he's like, your brain doesn't really know what to do about it, but now you have this new category. And that's kind of what happened with the global financial crisis. Because up to that point, people thought, oh, housing values, those always go up. Well, no, they can go down. So how do we adjust to that? All of a sudden now, though, it seems like everybody or a lot of people think that there's a black swan around every corner ready to pick your pocket, right? So you see one, and now all of a sudden you're on the lookout for them all over the place. And I think that's kind of defined almost financial media. Ever since the global financial crisis, they always like to give air to these people who are constantly bearish and tell you to be vigilant and be on the lookout for all these black swans that are really ready to peck away at your retirement savings.
I like that. That's a way to take the analogy all the way to the end.
Right? That's right.
That's really good. Let's go back and talk a little bit about some tax legislation. Very unique period of time. In 2001, Bush tax cuts, and there was this gradual phase out of the estate tax that was built into that tax legislation. So over a period of time, estate tax would gradually basically dissipate to the point where in 2010, there was no estate tax for 1 year. Very famously, it's tragic, of course, George Steinbrenner died in that year. He was the owner of the New York Yankees and was able to pass the New York Yankees to his heirs without any estate tax by accomplishing that in 2010.
I know. Yeah. Where some people looked at that like, wow, you know, it's his timing was really good. Is there really a good time to die? But in that case, from an estate planning perspective, yeah, he was able to pass on the New York Yankees and the rest of his estate tax-free. Now, since then, obviously, there has been a lot of changes. Most famously, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that was passed in 2025 has made more permanent some of the high exemptions that we have, because it was recognized that without these adjustments, more and more households, more and more estates were getting caught up in the estate tax. And, you know, there's obviously arguments for and against the estate tax, but I think generally speaking, we've accepted that it really shouldn't apply to your typical American when they're passing on their house or an IRA to their heirs.
Absolutely. So fast forward through all that period of time, and along comes the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. And this is one that will be marked in history, obviously, because of how significant it was. The backdrop to that was probably built during the post-dot-com bubble, and what we referenced was that subprime buildup that occurred during that time period. And there was a reckoning that came along with it.
There was, yeah. The bubble, you ended up getting the burst in the housing market, and then what was happening as far as the rebuilding. So that subprime crisis, I think, is important to remember. That was a financial crisis. It wasn't really an economic crisis. It became one, but it had its roots in finance. And that's actually what we've seen with a number of things in terms of recessions. We always have to distinguish, is this a recession where it's kind of correcting something in terms of too much inventory buildup, or is it really driven by the plumbing of the financial systems?
There it is, another episode of Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. The podcast version of this episode is ready right now on the radio station website, or just search Annex Money Talk. For Mark Beck and Dr. Brian Jacobson, happy 4th of July weekend. Have a great week. Join us again next Saturday at 10 a.m. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.
Advice and opinions expressed during Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, are solely that of the hosts or guests of Annex Wealth Management, and not WTMJ Radio or Good Karma Brands Milwaukee, LLC.